Hey everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. For our new listeners, welcome back to all our old listeners. Hopefully we've got a picked up a few over the course. I'm Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. For the first time in a long time, we have two other chairs filled in the gaze room.
So good, Robbie.
Mike Zeppel, Justin Shuler, welcome back, guys.
Robbie. G'day, mate.
Season 4, Robbie.
Season 4, episode 29.
Only one 29 you ever need to talk about, Rob. G. Ablett. Move on.
Deal. So we are back, obviously, for season 4. Hopefully everyone's subscribing to the podcast. You can pick it up on iTunes, also Spotify now.
Spotify, baby.
Our comms guys doing work in the off-season have got that sorted.
Link that to your Sonos and you're away to go.
Indeed. You are plugging everything, looking for a sponsor.
I'm looking for a new speaker. I need one more speaker.
If you can, please do leave a rating and review on the socials. That would be fantastic. Once this does drop, which is usually a Friday afternoon at about 3 p.m, if you can please like, share, retweet the podcast, that would be great, with the hashtag Talking Split. We'll pick up all your interactions from there. Two of us are usually pretty good at replying to people online. One not so much.
I call everyone personally, Robbie.
Oh, is that right? The personal interaction is fantastic. Now, just touched on it, like, we are back for season 4, but it has been a while since we've seen you, Justin.
It has been.
I assume you've been listening to the podcast in your absence.
It was funny. Like, while I was away, I thought I'd better listen into the first one just to see what these two are saying. And sure enough, it was quite entertaining with Zeppel's useless facts of Argentina. But yes, no, good to be back, Robbie.
Excellent. And where have you been, of course?
Been in the beautiful South American part of Argentina. Yeah, pretty long campaign for us with our under-17 World Championship. Yeah, and still not quite sure how I feel about it.
Good. You always feel good afterwards. Like, it's an honour to coach your country. You feel good.
No, absolutely. And, like, there is pride in kind of how well we competed, how the athletes progress, all those sorts of things. But, you know, how close we were to probably realistically being a bronze medalist is something that probably will stick with me for a while.
Didn't believe in blowing teams out and having just comfortable wins, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I guess, well, our first three games were all two-point margins. Having this been my third World Champs, the biggest difference I found this time round was the depth of tournament. And the reason for that was how many athletes are now actually based in the US. Like, the Dominican Republic team were practically based in the US, Puerto Rico were basically based in the US. You know, Mali had two kids playing pro league level, where even just 2 years ago that wasn't happening, and definitely 4 years ago that wasn't the case. So right off the bat, you know, what we thought was a great draw for us going into the pool, you know, three out of our pool go top six. So yeah, it was a strong tournament right off the bat. Came out in second place of the pool. 2-point loss to Turkey is something that will haunt me forever, because if we came first in that, I think we would have had the placing that Puerto Rico had.
Interesting, mate. What about styles of play that you came up against while you're over there? Was there something distinct that stood out that countries ran, or, you know, comparing, you know, what we do nationally here with our style of play in comparison to, like, a South American country or a European country?
Yeah, I guess for us, our challenge has always been the Americas and just how athletic and downhill on the bounce they are. You know, not as much structure, but a lot of spread play and just get to the rim. You know, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Canada, all three of them played the same way. And they were the three biggest challenges we had in a lot of ways. Funnily enough, against Europe, like, Turkey were built to beat us. Like, they just had better size to match with the guard play and the wing play that we felt we had. But, you know, when it came down to, like, Croatia, who were built very similar to us, well, we took care of that game quite easily. So, you know, still the same sort of styles of play throughout Europe, bring the ball down the middle of the floor, a lot of horns action. You know, Turkey really used their bigs to their advantage and had a few real meaningful, you know, pounded into the post type action, so we decided to disrupt and zone a lot against them just to be able to compete. But yeah, I mean, really, it was more about, can you defend athleticism? And even against Turkey in our zone, the guards were just so good at getting to the rim. And The three main takes I took out of it were we didn't shoot the ball well enough from the three or the free throw line. We had to be better from that. Being able to just stay in front and defend your man. We felt like we needed to manufacture quite a bit from a disruptive scheme and from a, I've coached more zone than I've ever coached in my life. And that came down to just matchups and being able to stay in front of people. And then just, ball use and being able to play with it. Our system was built around getting in the paint off the bounce. We didn't have size in the post, so we weren't really a pass penetration group. And that, in hindsight, is a big error from my part. Like, I really wish I would have seen that going into it and just some more elbow hit, pass penetration, things like that that still allowed us to penetrate and go with it. The things I think we did well was we moved the ball better than pretty much everyone we played. We played with great spacing. We had a really good understanding of what a great shot was versus a good shot. Pace, poise, penetration, all the offensive end of things really worked in our favour. But defensively, we just weren't at the level that we needed to be.
Was there a position at the tournament, like was it the two, the three, the four? Was it the point guard that you felt was the strongest at the event and that gave us the most trouble? And I'm just thinking back to Schweitzer. It was the 6'7" kid that could shoot it, had great athleticism and just physically thick that really troubled us. Is there something that stood out position-wise?
Yeah, like the strong wings were a challenge. Like, Luke Travers was outstanding for us all tournament. A little bit lighter frame, so sometimes, that was a challenge both ways on the floor, but some of those strong wings were definitely a challenge in that they can stick the three, they can get to the rim. So being able to figure out how you're taking care of that. To me, though, it was still point guard play. What I saw a lot more of was, and going back to trends, I should have spoken, there's a lot more flare screening action now than before. It's still, heavy predicated middle ball screen. We were probably the only nation that really had a lot of side ball screen still. So that was something in that sense. But, just guard play that can just pick you apart, out of the ball screen and just find what they wanted. Organisational skills, like the point guards that we went against were really good. And, Marley, I'm going to say his name wrong, but Canautu, or the kid playing over in France, like, he was just super elite. But the other thing, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico both played two point guards on the floor at the same time. So now you're dealing with two decision makers, can get in the paint, can distribute and play, which is something that, we didn't have the ability to do, but something that was unique for, again, in three world championships. That's the first time we saw it multiple times.
Yeah, a few of those guards that you mentioned were at the NBA Prospects Camp last week. And they were really good. Like, you can see how they would be an absolute handful at an event where they had great quickness. They're like 6'2", 6'3", slippery, downhill. And you can see that would be a real challenge to, in a mid pick and roll.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there was just genuine size, like Barlow from Mali as well, that everyone's touting would be an NBA prospect. Like, I think he had a game there just after us, 32-32, which is a new record in rebounding. The talent was really there. Like, the one thing I will say is the US were 40 points better than everyone. I think it's the best US group that I've seen there in my three goes. But, I think the French were beatable. I definitely know Puerto Rico were beatable because we beat them twice. And Canada, that quarterfinal just kills me thinking about it right now. And went back and watched it just to see if I'm bluffing myself that we were in that game the whole way. But, 33% we shoot. We did everything right apart from put the ball in the hole. And, you talk to athletes about missed box outs, and it was just really one missed box out and a tip in. We held them to three O boards. And we preached that all week that, if we keep them down on O boards, we're going to be in great shape. And Luke Jackson was outstanding on the glass for us. Kobe Williamson, our bigs really battled against bigger bodies. But missed box out, they tipped that in, and now that's the ball game. And, a 4-point loss in a quarter final when you're probably the third best group in the tournament is a tough one to swallow.
Well, it's good to have you back, mate. It's good to have you back. Probably, You think he'd be here for the full season, Robbie? Or might miss one or two?
We can live in hope. I've got a feeling he may miss a
skip out, I would think. I would think. Hey, we'd be amiss right now if we didn't wish our under-17 girls good luck. Absolutely. Through the rest of their campaign. So had a really good win yesterday evening against New Zealand. So they've got, a quarter final tomorrow night or Friday evening. I think it's 11:30. You can watch that one online. So we're 7th in the world and Italy's 10th. So it's going to be a pretty good matchup for our girls. And
it was the gold silver medalist from 2 years back. So, I mean, it often doesn't necessarily translate, but both countries have a real proud tradition of female basketball in their nation. So it is a tough quarter final, but, you know, Shannon's got the girls playing really well. And, you know, I think they're definitely in the hunt for another medal.
So Shannon's second time through as head coach, your first time through from your Worlds, though. So what were the differences for you, like, going from an assistant coach...
Hot seat, baby. Hot seat.
...the man that makes every decision?
Did not sit down. I watched a lot of it and did not sit down one time.
No, I didn't sit down one time. I never do, though. But, yeah, you don't sleep, I find, when you're the head coach. And I guess what we tried to build was a culture and a program that allowed the athletes to just keep getting better, and that also meant us as a staff getting better each day. And you know, the challenges we had pre-tournament of, you know, we only got two pre-tournament games, which, you know, we didn't probably feel like we really got our rhythm until we met Puerto Rico, those sorts of things. And that's something as a head coach was constantly on my mind of, how can we generate this rhythm better? But also, I mean, the buck stops with you, and the result ultimately does stop with you. So that is definitely a different feeling. The thing that I love, though, is how much, you know, feedback and support you get when you are in that seat. You know, we had, you know, great messages from the Boomer boys while they were away, you know, coaching mentors of mine, people that have been through the program the whole way. You know, we were hearing from athletes every day, and it just makes you realize you're bigger, part of something that's bigger than you in that real time. So that also did add a little bit extra pressure to trying to keep, you know, the Crocs tradition of meddling and doing well in the tournament. But, you know, the boys tied for third best team of all time, so as a Crocs program, so that's what we're hanging on to. And, you know, I'd love the opportunity to one day do it again, but definitely, like, one of the best basketball things I've ever done, to try and stay up for basically 3 weeks, you know, peaking every day as a head coach is a challenge. A lot harder than when I was assisting Wocko, that's for sure.
Yeah, funnily enough, who knew? All right, so that covers off our green and gold portion of the show. We're now going to talk about something a little blue. We went out this morning, Mike. No Justin, you know, so he's in for half the program, but that's okay. We ventured out to Beyond Blue this morning, where we met with Dr. Grant Blaschke, who spoke about mental health from a playing and coaching perspective. We'll get into Grant now. So we're down at Hawthorn at Beyond Blue with Dr. Grant Blaschke. Welcome, Grant.
Hi, thanks a lot for having me on your podcast.
Appreciate you jumping in. We sort of touched base with Beyond Blue around about a month ago to sort of say, hey, look, this is a topic we'd really like to discuss. Do you want to give us a little bit of your background before we kick off?
Sure. I work as a GP, an everyday GP, and half my job is here at Beyond Blue as their lead clinical advisor. And I enjoy talking about mental health issues, which are a really common issue in the community, and really delighted to talk about how this all fits for you working in the basketball area and working with coaches and kids and parents. I think your job might be harder than my job as a GP by the sounds of it.
This is true, Grant.
Yeah.
This is true.
Mike's still pushing for a pay rise. So anything you can sort of push in his direction, that'd be fantastic. But I suppose we start off, it's a term that we hear in the media a lot at the moment, and people are becoming more and more aware of it. But what actually is mental health? It's a really sort of thrown about term, but what is it?
Yeah, look, it's really interesting because, I mean, throughout history, you know, human beings have always had sadness and worry and stress, and that's just being a normal human. So we don't want to over-medicalise just all that normal part of life. But we know people who are mentally healthy often have quite a nice balance. You know, if you're lucky to have your physical health and some friends and family and doing a job that gives you a bit of a sense of purpose or study, we sort of all know a little bit what a mentally healthy life looks like. But I think more and more people are understanding, well, what's this mental illness issue? What are the sorts of problems that people have? And they're really common, these issues, such as depression. We know about 1 million Australians have depression, so it's not rare. In fact, when I'm teaching students at the uni, I'm at Melbourne Uni as a professor there, I often say to them, listen, don't worry about the textbooks. I say, just look around your family barbecue, because there'll be one or two, some people in the family where you go, oh, you know, they're having mental health issues. You know, this is not something people don't know about. Same with anxiety, which is becoming more and more of an issue. We think about 2 million Australians have anxiety. So, you know, it's they're common things. And what we're seeing is that the community is getting more and more interested in, well, what can we do about this? How can we help our kids? How can we help our family? How can we stay mentally healthy?
Really interesting. And Robbie and I spoke about it before, like drawing the line between just regular sadness and depression. And that must be a really tough part for you as a physician to figure out, and how to define and educate people on.
Yeah, look, I think there definitely is a line, a sort of a spectrum between normal sadness and depression. There's a couple of things people can know about. On the Beyond Blue website, which has heaps of information about this, there's actually a little quiz you can take, and that will give you a little bit of a sense about, you know, what sort of score you get on it, and if you're just having normal levels of stress or maybe a little bit more. But I think some of the things that we look for are, you know, in depression, a sort of persistent sadness, you know, at least 2 weeks, and usually a couple of months at least. Withdrawing from things, so not doing your usual things that you used to like doing. Other people will find will have a lot of sleep problems. Another common issue is often, as a GP, people come in with physical symptoms. So I see a lot of young people, saw some this week, came in with, oh, I've got palpitations, I think maybe I've got a heart issue, you know, a bit of an anxiety. So, you know, the body and mind really are very much linked. And so I think, you know, these issues are very important to think about. I think for yourselves, working with coaches, you know, I'm very mindful that you've got a lot of respect from these young people and you've got a lot of contact with them. And we know that a lot of mental health issues actually start sort of, you know, under the age of 14 or 15 already. The, you know, the signs that they're going to have issues later on are starting to be there. So in some sense, you know, without trying to put too much responsibility on you, you're basically coaching basketball. But, you know, just to be aware of the issues and to look out a bit for those kids where you think, gee, they're really struggling a little bit now, maybe there's something going on here. So I think you're in a great position, really.
Absolutely. So what would some of the signs be as a coach? So we probably get access to our kids maybe 2 to 3 times a week, where we don't see them daily. So it can be a little bit difficult to know. But what would some of the identifying factors be for athletes that might be suffering from mental problems, so such as depression and anxiety?
Yeah, look, so there's a few sort of common sense things that you look out for. So a big drop in performance. And that can be, you know, from people either getting a bit depressed and, you know, so they've stopped practicing and, you know, they're not participating as much. Sometimes elite athletes, you know, they're sort of overthinking things. You know, they get their minds in overdrive and it actually detracts from their performance. So, you know, a lot of elite athletes, and there's psychologists who spend a lifetime, you know, talking about this, they try and help athletes find that sweet spot. You know, you got enough stress to be motivated, but not so much stress that your mind's distracting you from doing what you've got to be doing and focusing on what's going on. I think with young people, you know, non-attendance, you know, they just suddenly start not turning up to things. Uncharacteristic sort of moodiness or angry outbursts, I think, are another thing to be aware of. You know, so all people's personalities are different and some kids are going to be a little bit more challenging anyway. But, you know, if you've got a kid, it seems like there's been a big change in how they were responding. You know, you find they're getting into fights and really oppositional with everyone and you think, God, this is a big change. That's not usually how they interact. So just, I think, having an ear to the ground for that. One thing I'd recommend for coaches there's a really good program, and I don't know if you've heard of it, called the Mental Health First Aid Program. So actually, millions of Australians have already done this. It's a short course, so they're not trying to make you into doctors or psychologists. But, you know, in the same way you understand physical first aid, you know, what do you do if a kid's twisted their knee? What do you do if a kid gets knocked out?
Yeah.
You know, you learn about all this. So there's a real push now to go, well, okay, what are the mental health issues that I need to know about? And what steps would I take? Yeah. Who would I contact? What do I do? And so I think the mental health first aid program is really good, and maybe we can put a link or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds exactly like what we're going to do, Dr. Grant. And that's really interesting, because in our space, we will have a kid come in and they've been no good for 4 weeks in a row, and we just think that they're just no good for 4 weeks in a row. Missing shots or dribbling the ball off their foot or whatever the reason is, it's probably worth investigating exactly why their performance has dwindled.
So how do you approach that with the player and potentially the parent? You don't want to walk up to the parent and just say, hey, I think your child's depressed. Yeah. Now it's your problem. How do you deal with that, and how do you start that conversation as well?
It's a great question. And I think it's a general question for the community, because there's a lot of stigma. And I mean, even as a doctor, you know, so we have to raise these issues a bit delicately. No one likes being told, hey, listen, I think you've got a mental health issue. So context matters. Like when you talk to them, you know, maybe making a time separately from all the sort of the middle of a match or, you know, where all the lots of other parents are floating around, and just say, listen, why don't we just catch up for a drink afterwards or a coffee or something? I just want to have a bit of a yarn to you about the child, maybe have a chat to the parent. And there's no one way to frame it. You've got to use your judgment. It depends on the, you know, the background of the parent and their culture and all that. But something you could say is, listen, I think it might be good for them to have a bit of a checkup. And a really good place to start is the GP. Now, GPs are great in lots of ways. I'm going to fly our own flag here a little.
Go for it.
But we do that plenty.
All about self-promotion, it's okay.
Why not? But, you know, we're a pretty low stigma option, right? So no one really cares. And 2 million, you know, people going to GPs every week, so no one notices. You go along. For starters, if performance has gone off, it wouldn't be bad for them to have a physical health checkup. You know, kids get illnesses. Maybe they've got low iron or anemia, low blood count, or, you know, their thyroid gland, which is this big gland in their neck, can go off. And so, you know, physical stuff can happen. So the GP can have a look at the kid, maybe do some blood tests. Just now, framed with all that, the GP can also raise, listen, oh, how are they sleeping? How are they going? And, you know, the parents might even give a bit of a heads up to the GP that there could be a mental health issue. Now, as a GP, you know, usually you pick up issues with the kids, and can be performance at school, change in appetite, you know, they might have dropped a lot of weight. There's all these sort of little flags that come up. And of course, it's quite a turbulent time for kids anyway, so you're trying to work out, is this just within the range of what we'd expect, or is this more than that? But if it's affecting their day-to-day life, like school or sport performance, that's a bit of a red flag for me.
Mm.
Now, it'd be great for your listeners to be aware that there's a thing called a GP mental health plan. Bit of a mouthful, but the GP can do this structured assessment of the kid to have a look how their mental health is. And one of the cool things about this is, once you've done that, Medicare will subsidise if you need to send the kid to a psychologist.
Awesome.
And the GPs know who the local mental health professionals are. Often parents are under the hammer financially, so it's good to know that it's going to be subsidised so that they're not up for a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Another service to be aware of, and again, this might be news to some of your listeners, is all around Australia, we've got these clinics called Headspace, right? Now, 12 to 25-year-olds, they can go, not pay. It's, again, it's sort of framed within physical and mental health, so it doesn't feel like too much stigma, but they have really good psychologists and they assess the kid, and it's ongoing and no cost. So you can see what we've done in Australia. We're really putting the effort into the young people. If you get stuff sorted out in your teens, early 20s, that's going to help you through your whole life. So, you know, I think it's a really critical time. So that was a long answer for you.
Love it.
But a fantastic answer all the same. So
yeah, and it's really, for us, we really deal with, and I guess I'll speak for myself. Robbie coaches an under-12s team, so got 10 and 11-year-olds. The cohort of athletes I work with are probably 13 through to 18, which is like smack bang into what you were just saying. You're dealing with 15-year-old, impressionable, influenceable people who you can impact their life one way or the other.
Look, you're absolutely right. My best friend's a footy coach, and like we walk around the community, and pretty much he's been doing it for 30 years, and any young man between, you know, 20 and about 40 knows him.
Yeah.
And they come up and he's such a mentor and such a leader, and they hang off every word he says. And so maybe it's a good point here to just to talk about, you know, how do we shift the culture to make a sort of mentally healthy culture?
Mm.
So at Beyond Blue, we do a lot of work with workplaces. Like, how do we make a mentally healthy work culture, right? And I think it's the same in a big sporting club. So there's a few things you can do. First of all, the leaders are critical. Like, you need buy-in at sort of the board level, that they take it seriously, you know, that they go, right, this is a big issue for us. Having senior mentors, senior people talk openly about mental health is gold, right? Because it starts to make it part of the conversation. So, you know, and even if people are happy to, senior people talking about maybe when they had a bit of a hard time, I mean, they don't have to bare their soul.
Yep.
But, you know, and just say, oh, yeah, when I was 17, I missed out on a big recruitment and it was really heartbreaking, but this is how I dealt with it at the time.
Mm.
Those sort of stories are worth a lot more than me as a doctor or a psychologist talking about it. So I think modelling and leadership at the club's really important, talking about mental health issues, and then making it a priority as a club to invest in your coaches, so that they, you know, they do go and do the mental health first aid training. They know who to get help from and they don't feel out of their depth, because we're asking a lot, you know, apart from trying to win matches, deal with parents,
yeah,
deal with kids. You know, it's a big gig.
Yeah.
We can't be everything. But you know, I think it's a really good investment in the coaches and in the kids, and then help set the culture. The other thing, remember that when someone does have a mental health issue, if it's a staff member or one of the kids, everyone's watching how that's reacted to. You know, there's a lot of little young eyes watching what's going on. You know, what happened with that kid? Did they just exclude them, or did we just not talk about them, or how did we bring them in as best we could? And so I think that modelling is really important. So I don't want to pretend we're in some utopian world, right? Like, it's pretty, I've been in footy clubs as a kid and that. You've got real issues. You've got bullying. You've got a huge variety of talent. You know, you got some kids are great. You've got the little clique of the really popular kids who are living the dream. Mm. And you've got the strugglers. And, you know, like, we're not pretending we're in some magic
just
world.
Just in case you're unsure, Mike was in the cool clique. I was in the strugglers clique as we went through. We just need to define that early.
All right. Looks like it's going to be a long interview. I might get their Medicare cards off them, you know.
I'm just trying to vent a little bit through my childhood as well. You know, this is very therapeutic for me.
So, you know, I'm not trying to pretend like, you know, it's everywhere. It's workplaces, you know, same when I was at school. But there's lots we can do, and I think the leaders actually set that tone. And I noticed on your website, you know, zero tolerance for sort of inappropriate behaviour from parents and things. And I think with the kids as well, you know, really coming down like a ton of bricks on bullying, and so that, you know, hopefully everyone's having a pretty good experience.
Mm.
I realise it's a balancing act. You know, you've got that big match that's going to make you into the finals or not, and you've got to decide who's on and who's on the bench. But, absolutely, you know, I think just trying to juggle those needs and being aware of it. But there's no question, I mean, you'd be interested. Our work with workplaces, we found out for every dollar that they put into building like a mentally healthy workplace, they get back $2.50 in the long term, because they've got less absenteeism, yep, you know, less what we call presenteeism, which is when people turn up,
yep,
don't pull their weight at all.
Yep. Motivated staff.
Yeah, all that stuff. So it's a pretty good investment.
Interesting.
A couple of other things that might be worth just chatting with you about is, remember, you know, even the most physically fit people can still have mental health problems. And there's actually been some research done on Australian athletes, and they have about the same rate as mental health issues as everyone else. So you can be the superstar, but you're still just as likely to get depression or anxiety issues. So that's worth remembering. I think for, you know, the more elite players, there's some particular issues. So, for example, pressure to perform. Mm. It's a pretty brutal in or out at a certain point. And often these young people have put all their eggs in that basket, so they don't have much life balance. Which is fair enough. They've thrown everything at it, but it's pretty devastating, you know, if they either don't get in or an injury, which is the other joker in the pack, I think, for elite sports people.
Absolutely. And that's, we talk in terms of high performance in Australia, within Australian basketball, and essentially high performance is the 1% of kids that are able to, you know, represent your country or be at that pinnacle of your sport. But what about the kid that sits just outside that 1% in that 2.5% bracket? Really, really good athlete, can still be a professional, and you still got to be able to manage that and manage your relationship with them and motivate them to stay with the sport and achievement and things like that. So we do have an interesting constituent here at Basel Victoria that is the parent group that we have spoken about a couple of times already. Have you seen much in the father-mother pressure on son-daughter to perform athletically, academically, and how that impacts kind of your adolescent teenagers?
Yeah. Look, I think it, in a sense, you know, you answer the question in your question. We definitely do see a lot of pressure on young people.
Mm.
We know, you know, our school system is creating an awful lot of pressure on kids. And you know, in a sports setting, I think you can have parents, as you would know better than me, who are very invested in the success of their kids. And again, we don't want to be realistic. We don't want to sell that short. I think reaching for the stars, striving for excellence, it's great. It's really good. The trick is to get the balance right and to separate out the child from their performance, you know. So the child should feel like they're valued, they're important, no matter how they perform. They're a great person, they're giving it their all, and they're loved, and that isn't related to whether or not they win or are the superstar. At the same time, you know, you can have a conversation and go, listen, it didn't look like you were really putting your best effort, or, you know, we had that discussion about you going out on Saturday night and you were out till 3 a.m, and clearly that did not help your performance on Sunday morning, you know. So, but I think a nice trick is to separate the child's valued and loved regardless. And if you want to criticise something, you can criticise the behaviours. You know, you could have done this better or that better. So it's getting the balance right. There's a whole lot of psychology, and there are sports psychologists that like dedicate their life to this, and they'll know a lot more than me. But just to flag it, it's really worth people being aware of what we call cognitive behavioural therapy. I don't know if you've heard of it, but basically it sort of decodes a little bit that self-talk, that thinking that goes on in people's minds. So I'll give you an example so it doesn't feel too abstract.
Mm.
So say you've got a young kid and they lose a match, right? Now, a healthy way to think about that might be, well, let's talk about the unhealthy way. So they sit in the car with dad and they go, I'm a terrible player and, you know, I'm giving up basketball and I'll never be good at any sports. So in that language, in that self-talk to themselves, what they're doing is what we call overgeneralizing. So they've taken one instance, you know, which is they lost a match, and then they overgeneralize it to everything. I'm no good at any sports.
Mm.
So you see how they've made that jump. So what CBT sort of approach does is go, well, hang on a minute, let's just have a look at the facts here, you know. So you lost that match, but is there any other reason for that? Oh, yeah, you know, the other team were a foot taller than us and we're in a higher grade than we should have been or whatever. Or, you know, on this particular day, that team played a lot better than us. But you can see that's a much healthier framing in your mind.
Yeah,
or, you know, it might be that, we didn't play well enough on that match. Let's try extra hard at training this week. Some of these are sort of messages that I'm sure you're used to in your inspiring coach talks in the break. But I think being aware of the difference between that really negative, what we call catastrophizing thinking, overgeneralizing thinking, and that very sort of productive, realistic thinking about what have I got to do.
That's really interesting, because there would be a lot of coaches out there that would think that they can win on Friday night. Like, we play Friday evenings here in Melbourne, and as a casual observer, if you saw the two teams side by side, that coach actually has no chance of winning that game,
right,
based on the talent on the floor. And how you deal with that with your athletes is really interesting, and it can send the athlete one or two ways. Like, if this is a developmental piece and we're dealing with, say, 13-year-old girls, and we're looking at long-term development, how you handle that moment in time is really critical to their successes in 5 or 6 years' time. Because if you allow that kind of, if it comes from the coach, like, we lost, we didn't do this, but the cognitive behavioral therapy would suggest the other girls were 1 foot taller and you were never going to win. How do you deal with that when you're talking about 13 and 14-year-old girls? It's interesting.
Well, this is, I think, where, you know, really, you know, without overstating it, but you do have a really important role for these young people, and you're helping them build resilience, because a lot of these lessons, like, they are directly transferable when they're 22 and they go for the job and they don't get the job.
For sure.
And, you know, and they either draw the conclusion, listen, I'm hopeless, I shouldn't have even tried for this job, I'm not going to try for any more jobs, right? That's not a good conclusion. Whereas it might be, oh, I came third, they only wanted two people, I'm going to have to boost my resume in this regard. So that's sort of really creative, what do I need to do about it? Problem solving is really where you want to take them, and I think that's what they're learning all the time.
Absolutely. There's a couple of good articles Robbie and I have read recently around the drive home from the game.
Oh, right.
Is essentially the athlete or the kid's least favorite time in the week, and it's written with a psychological tone and message to it, but it is essentially you get in the car and then you sit in the back seat and mum and dad are in the front seat, and they're just hammering with, you didn't do this, this is why you lost, this is why the team's no good, coach doesn't know what they're doing, what the hell are we doing, we need to move clubs, the articles are really, really interesting. And I would think it goes across all sports in Australia, and you know, the world would be a generalisation.
Yep.
All sports, in terms of pressures on athletes and juniors, and it's a dangerous space for us to live in.
Yeah, look, I think talking about all these things, and it sounds like part of your job is engaging with the parents. When we get back to the culture, you know, right from the top, the leadership, the coaches, the parents, you know, their buy-in into these ideas. And it is a balance, you know, we are pushing and we want to push. I mean, it's a great thing about Australians. I love it that we have a go and we have a crack, and, you know, you really try and excel as much as you can. And at the same time, you know, making sure that people don't get crushed along the way is pretty important, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, one part we probably haven't touched on is coach mental health as well.
Yeah.
So it can be really difficult for a coach that, I think you said it before, Mike, you're pulled in 15 different directions.
Yeah.
You've got to try and win the game. You've got to try and develop the athletes. You've got to try and keep the players happy. You've got to try and keep the parents happy. Then you've actually got your own life that goes on outside of this. There are very few full-time employed coaches in basketball. Mike is one of the very few, still looking for a salary bump if anyone's listening that has power over that. But you know,
my boss's name is Grant as well, Dr. Grant, but he is not a doctor.
No, he's not. What are some of the things that coaches can do to help with their performance as well? You spoke a little bit earlier about diet and sleep. Obviously,
yeah,
matters a lot to them, but also anxiety with coaches can be a really big thing. They can have an incident in a game that happens at 2 p.m., but at 10 p.m. that night, they're still thinking about it.
Yeah. So there's a couple of issues there. And, you know, you guys remind me a little bit of small business people, you know, because people running small businesses are a bit like you. It's sort of 24 hours. They've got multiple inputs. There's a lot of responsibility. So the first thing I say is, if you can, easy to say, try and draw a boundary between when you're on and when you're off. Now, I know that's hard because you've probably got emails and the fixture and everything coming through the whole time.
Talk about emails.
But you know, you might actually have a time where you manage that electronic communication. You know, I don't know how to do it. You have a separate email address that you switch off. Just a side note on that, you know, careful with the group emails. I think the group emails are tiger country for all of us.
Mm.
particularly if there's a criticism, they go down really badly.
Yeah, reply all is the worst technological aspect in the world.
I mean, really upset people when you humiliate them, you know. So, but, you know, putting some boundaries around the electronics thing, same with the social media about the team, you know, this is a broader issue, but somehow trying to manage boundaries. I don't know, put your phone on aeroplane mode on Sunday morning or sometime so that you just get a little bit of...
Love all of these.
Bit of a break from just being on, you know, the whole time. Second thing is manage expectations, right? So manage expectations of the kids, you know, like you were talking before.
Mm.
Like if they go out and you're pretty sure they're going to get hammered, right? So you might say, okay, your job today, I want to focus on teamwork. I'm going to be counting how many passes you do. Well, I'm making that up, but something.
Yeah.
Like pick some other proxy measure because you know they're going to lose by 20 shots or whatever points. Then, you know, you can see I'm such a basketball expert. but you know.
You're better than the other guy who usually sits in on this podcast.
Oh, okay, good. But, you know, set some other proxy measure so they can come out quarter time and go, that was great. You did more passes. I'm really happy with that. Yes, we're 10 points behind, but it's okay. Second thing is manage parents' expectations, right? And I think, you know, it sounds like there's quite a lot of stuff on the website already about expectations of behaviours, but I think expectations of what each child can get. So it is a trade-off between fairness and being effectively winning some matches. And I think it's better to be explicit about that up front. You know, and I guess as the kids get older, to say this, and we really are trying to win here, it's a tough world. And, you know, maybe with the little ones. I mean, I remember being up in Sydney where my kids were in soccer teams and they were like little ones, really little, like grade one or something. And it was like 6 weeks of grading, you know, and I just thought, wow, this is just intense.
You have not been prompted. Tell the audience you have not been prompted. It is a major issue.
Oh, yeah, I haven't been prompted. This is my experience. I was flabbergasted. There was a really competitive culture up there. And I thought, wow, that's pretty harsh. Yeah. Anyways, so you've obviously... But we were talking about managing coach stress. So there were managing boundaries, managing expectations, your expectations, expectations of the parents, expectations of the kids. You know, like if it can't just be one outcome, like we win or we failed. In CBT, we call that black and white thinking.
Mm.
Like you either win the premiership or you complete crap.
Right.
And there's no shades of grey.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So exactly. I think what we're looking for is shades of grey.
Yeah. And we speak about that, and kind of the word that would be associated with basketball would be development. Like the development between high performance, you know, define high performance, top 1%. Got to try and win gold medals at World Cups.
Yeah.
But in between under 12 girls, under 12 boys and the World Cup, there is a lot of that grey, isn't there?
Heap of grey.
Yeah.
So one more thing I wanted to talk about. It's a little bit more of a... You know, we've already had pretty heavy-duty issues, but anyway, I think it's important, is, you know, in Australia, we still are seeing a pretty significant suicide rate. And I know it's a pretty heavy topic for your listener, but it's just a reality.
Yeah.
You know, in Australia, where it's still right up there with the road toll. So just flag, you know, if your parents or your coaches and you see, you know, a young person who's really talking quite seriously about harming themselves, like take it seriously, you know, they're not usually just attention seeking. Get some help. You can either take them to the GP or you can ring the... Lifeline 13114, or you know, get, and then you get some urgent help. So I think you know what we're encouraging in Beyond Blue is that it's okay to ask a young person. Again, you don't have to be a psychologist, but just go, listen, how are you going? Pick your moment, and if you feel like they're, you know, thinking seriously about harming themselves, put up your hand, get some help, let the GP know. If it's more urgent, you know, ring Lifeline. And so, you know, that's a minority of the issues. I think we're talking about a lot of the upstream sort of mental health issues. But statistically, you know, you guys are covering a lot of kids. You're going to come across some kids that are pretty distressed and feel like they're a bit trapped and they don't have any other options. So
absolutely.
Take that seriously. You know?
And if you think about, so take a grade 8 kid, for example, they're at school between 8 and 3, so there's 7 hours of their day. They might have practice in the evening for 2 hours, a couple of times a week. The majority of their week is actually spent outside the family home, inside the classroom, or at the club. The, you know, the football, the netball, the basketball club, and the influence that teachers and coaches, it can't be understated, because so much of the time of the week is actually spent outside of where their parents are.
Look, you're spot on, and at Beyond Blue, we're just doing this massive program at the moment that's going to go all through the schools, help the teachers, just to recognise these issues. So that we don't have a magic wand, and we can't, you know, we're not all going to have perfect lives and everyone's perfectly happy. But in this particular sort of at-risk issue, we do know that often there's sort of some signs that you can pick up a bit earlier, and we get in there. On an optimistic note, as a GP, I help a heap of people with mental health issues, and they, most of them get better. Like, they really do. Like, I'll have, you know, I've got patients at the moment, I'll go, listen, it seems like you're in a hole now, but we'll look back in Christmas and we'll go, oh, God, that wasn't fun. But they get it sorted out. Also, remember, think about all the high-profile footy players that have come out, and usually they get better.
Yeah.
You know, they get, when they go and get the proper help, they actually, and Olympic stars and things, all those people that have come out publicly. Beyond Blue has a bunch of ambassadors, you know, because they talk about their issues, but they tend to get better. So what we want people is to, you know, set the culture at the club, help the coaches, manage everyone's expectations, you know, makes it a really a mentally healthy community. You know, I sound like I'm going to start singing, don't I?
No. But I think, I mean, you've hit on a really important topic, though. The culture really does matter, and I think players will have their own friendship groups, but as coaches, we have it as well. We just call it networks. Like, you want to have a good coaching network where it's okay to talk about these sorts of things. Like, it's not a taboo topic where it's like, hey, we don't really want to discuss this at all. If you are struggling with something, go and talk to someone. And it doesn't have to be a GP. It might just be a friend that is completely removed from basketball, that has no idea what you're talking about or the context that it's in, but you still get to get the message out. And I think that's the biggest thing for coaches, is we do need to be aware of the topics for our players, but also look after our own mental health, because as coaches, we are responsible for a lot of people underneath us. And the impact, well, we want people coaching. If we can't have people coaching, that impacts on hundreds of kids over the course of a couple of years as well. So we need coaches, and we need everyone in their best mental state they can possibly be in. So,
And coaching, you could remove the word coaching this and completely replace it with leadership. Like, we need strong leaders. We would be better off having 10,000 leaders in Victorian basketball who know nothing about coaching but can lead young adults. So I think that's the real clear distinction for mine, is don't get hung up on the basketball side of it. It's really important for us to have a great product, absolutely. But if we have great leaders leading the under 16 girls at Altona, then we're going to be much better off in the future.
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's a great responsibility and a great opportunity as well. You know, I mean, you've got this great access to all these young people. Like I said before, we know most of the mental health issues, I think 50% of adults with mental health issues, their problems sort of started under the age of 14. So, you know, what a...
Robbie might have coached them.
Yeah, possibly.
I might be responsible, yeah.
But, you know, on the flip side, what a great opportunity, huh?
Well, they might be responsible for mine, I suppose, if you look at it the other way as well. You never really know.
We've spoke about those under 12 and under 14s, how important those two grades of basketball are. And Dr. Grant just mentioning that kind of 14 years old is when some of these issues can start to be... you know, viewed from an outside perspective, unbelievably important.
Yeah, absolutely is. Dr. Grant, thank you very much for jumping in. We really appreciate your time. It's been fantastic. It's been insightful for us, and hopefully this is a great resource for coaches as well that can help our athletes or anyone listening. Like, as you said, Mike, it's not necessarily just coaches, it's leaders in the community as well, administrators that might be listening to this, just parents that might be listening to this. It's great to be able to talk about this with someone such as yourself, so that we can get some good knowledge out there to all the athletes and people involved in the community too.
Awesome. And we'll post all these links as well, that we've all these resources that we've spoken about.
Great. Real pleasure to be involved. And remember, there's lots of these information on the Beyond Blue website that people can have a look at and get a few extra tips. So keep up the great work, guys.
Awesome. Thanks very much. Thank you, mate.
All right, so that wraps us up with Dr. Graham Blaschke from Beyond Blue. A couple of things out of that. Mike, what did you take away from it?
Awesome, mate. Dr. Grant, first of all, he is a doctor and our Grant here is not a doctor. That's the first thing I took from that. But loved how he spoke about the cognitive behavioural therapy. We were kind of trying to figure out CBT.
Did you almost mumble that one?
Yeah, do you want to try that C word again?
Cognitive.
Oh, well done. That's better. That's better.
You two guys are rusty as anything. But the way that he spoke about just how that impacts just an athlete or a child's perception of where they are in life and how that mass generalization of how you feel can extend beyond like the basketball game or the classroom or wherever you are. So I think that's something you got to be really mindful of as a coach in how you're operating in that space. He had a ton of really good resources. So we'll get Robbie to put them up online in the show notes when the pod goes up. But a lot of those things are going to be awesome tools that you can use just online and being able to use some surveys and questionnaires that he spoke about. So I think he was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And a couple of those resources, you can find them on beyondblue.org.au. Their phone number is 1300 224 636. Or the Lifeline phone number is 13 11 14 as well for anyone that does want to know a little bit more or does feel that they need a little bit of help as well. The big thing is, I know we spoke about it at the very end, like the suicide, we do need to talk about it. It is something that the more we can give information to people about, I think is a really healthy thing, and especially building people's networks so that we can get everyone in the best mental state possible, I think is a really valuable thing.
Yeah, and in Justin and my space, the one that really stands out is that performance anxiety, which we speak about with our athletes a lot. It's a tough one because you really need somebody, some leadership, coaching, mentorship that can get you to a space on the floor, if we're talking basketball, in the classroom, on the stage if you're an actor, where you can have such a clear mind, free of conscience, and just go and perform. And that's such a tough place to get to as an athlete or as a professional. And the better help you can get to that point is really important.
You spoke about that as well. Like sports psychologists want to get you to a point where you're anxious to perform because that's a good thing for adrenaline and performance, but it can be too much as well. Yeah. And managing the two of them is a really difficult thing.
And I think, and the great coaches and leaders know the exact point to leave you at where you're not going to tip over and you're just going to go and perform.
It is something, though, that as a sport we just haven't invested in enough is, how to help athletes deal with that. We do train the hell out of it. We don't spend time on the mind, and so anything like this that can help, and definitely the challenges that are around the sport as well. Like everyone knows someone that's gone through something, and having avenues to deal with that is pretty important.
So going from green and gold to blue to now navy blue and white, really. So there is a great reminder.
You're just a rainbow, aren't you?
It's not bad. Zeppel's coming a little rusty, but I'm across this. So a fantastic reminder a couple of weeks ago why everyone hates Victorians. So under 16 nationals, one and done. All Victorian finals on the men and the women. I wasn't up there for the week. Justin, you caught the back end of it, obviously. Mike, you were up there.
I was up there, Robbie. The Sunshine Coast sucks in the middle of July, Robbie, I promise you. Don't go there. Anytime, mate. I'll just take that one for the team. Really, I'll speak on behalf of all four teams. I thought the way they carried themselves all week was really, really good. Thought the coaching staffs did a really good job leading all four teams, Metro and Country, up there. For us, awesome to see, because we kind of always we would always love to see our two teams playing off against each other, which is an awesome thing. Congratulations to the two Metro Stars for winning the event. I thought they did a really good job in them coaching their teams through the week to get better, which is what Justin spoke about before with his Oz group, is that you got to kind of improve day to day, and I thought that they did that. And I thought the athletes and parents were awesome through the week.
That's excellent. So what next for those guys? Like, this is the hard part. Like, you have a massive build-up to nationals, but what next?
What was interesting is that there was actually quite a few bottom-age kids up there across all four teams. So there's going to be a number of athletes who go back next year and play again, I'm sure.
They're also part of the 15s group coming up in December.
Yep.
Both top and bottom age were eligible for that squad, so that'll be selected in the near future. And yeah, I mean, the beauty of how we performed were sometimes just how we went about it. People can look at margins and whatnot, but the pleasing thing was we played the right way and had a foundation, found a way to, as you said, keep improving each day. To me, you know, like that's the challenge for these guys now is, all right, well, you've had success at this bracket. How can we have continued success moving forward?
Yeah. Absolutely. So great job, both of you guys.
We didn't play the game, Robbie. We did not play the game, Robbie.
That's very good. It's refreshing to hear a coach not take credit for something that's not necessarily theirs. It's very nice. So whilst you were sunning yourself up on the Sunshine Coast...
23 and sunny, Robbie. Yeah,
and Justin was in transit back from South...
Stuck in Sydney Airport, actually.
You went to the best place in the world.
I did go down to Werribee for the week showcase for the under 12 Metro kids. Great week in all honesty. Like it's the video's up online on the BV social platforms at the moment. Fantastic week of skill development. Coaches did a great job down there as well. Incredibly well supported by the parents who bought in to, let's face it, which was
something
a little bit
very
of a science
different
experiment.
Yep.
For a few of them. Yep. So just to sort of rehash, changing rules were.
We lowered the rims, Robbie. 8'6" rims. We brought the 3-point lines in, which Justin actually texted us from Argentina and said that
everywhere.
He saw all over South America
everywhere.
And
every
even European coaches were telling you that 3-point lines for under 12 kids are significantly closer internationally, which is really good to hear as we were laying the tape down. Thank you.
A little wee in that.
Robbie laying the tape.
And he delegated that as well. So
Yeah. Big thanks to all the other coaches that got down and put down tape.
Big time. We put some X's on the floor. So we had X's in the corners, in the diagonal, and in the seams. So 6 spots on the floor marked. And really the limited instruction was, let's occupy 5 of these X's. You can still use the posts. Like the blocks were still definitely spots on the floor. But let's play with great spacing. And from the reports and the footage that I've watched, which we have about a dozen games recorded, it looks like it was a small win for us.
Yeah, I think so too. It's interesting talking to the coaches about how they went with it as well. A big shift, obviously, from the, hey, we need to win mentality to actually coach kids for development. And it was great to see the coaches doing that and encouraging them to take the open shot where there might be a big kid that plays for a club that never gets to shoot that or has to post on the charge circle every Friday night. They're encouraged to take the jumper now. They're encouraged to play with space. And just the terminology the coaches were using, I thought was fantastic. I heard constantly, find the X, find the X, find the X. And that's great.
It is great.
From a spacing perspective. So, and the coaches did a great job. The biggest question I had from parents is, why are you lowering the rims for a 3-day event when they're going to have to go back and play on a 10-foot rim in a week's time?
Did you say because Zeppel said so?
Pretty much, yeah. You can contact him on michael.zeppel@basketballvictoria.com.au.
Legend.
And just handballed everything. But the big thing is the kids adjusted incredibly quickly. Like, I'm watching a few of the kids
human
shoot
nature,
ball.
Robbie.
It is. They are very adaptive kids. Watching the shooting techniques, by the end of the 3 days of gameplay, those kids would have no problem shooting the ball better on a 10-foot rim because their form was better, their technique was better, their preparation was better. And the arc in their shot was incredibly good compared to where it started.
Yep.
So it was amazing how quickly they adapted to it. And it's something that I think we can seriously look at throughout domestic competitions as well, is maybe this is something we need to invest a little bit more time and thought into.
A couple of things I heard was the lowered ring actually leveled the playing field. So the coach's comments back to me were, you couldn't actually tell who was playing in the under 12 ones at Casey or who was playing in the under 12 threes at Altona. Like, you couldn't tell. The lowering of the rings actually leveled the playing field, gives all the athletes a chance to have successes and make plays. I think that's a big one when you're talking about the ring. The more I think about it, every other sport changes the dimensions of their playing field and the equipment for junior athletes.
That's what that got pointed out to me. That was the number one thing that got pointed out to me.
Yeah. Football does not play on the MCG in under 15s,
no.
Under 16s.
The junior athletes, and I'm talking like under 12 level athletes, play on the 50 metre arc. Like they'll have two games going at each end. That's what I work.
Cricket brings the ropes in. Yep. Like I think the discussion is there. Like I hope the showcase provides a platform for discussion, and that's it. And change won't happen overnight, but I think over time, if it becomes a talking point for us to say, is this best practice, and can we discuss best practice? So that'll be the interesting
thing. The hardest thing with it is people have to have patience, because it's going to be, the product's not going to be next week there's suddenly a superstar, but you know, the kids that were in this one and then moving forward, are they coming out with a better product? And you know, I'll use the Jamboree as the example. My first year here, we made some changes to that, not like this, but from a, this is, we're actually going to teach them the right way to play straight away and have some concepts in place, and they're now the kids that have gone through from our gold medal groups, our silver medal groups, etc. So it does take time, but you would like to think this experience and moving forward will now set them up for greater success.
And having a motivated athlete, yeah, or a motivated child, like if they have some successes across that week to where they now enjoying shooting the basketball, playing outside by themselves, want to get better, that's like number 1A of that. With all the basketball that I watched during our talking split break, Robbie, the one thing I did see in decision making, and this whole event is really designed to encourage kids to shoot open shots. I think that is such a big part of it. And in regard to Vic Country style of play, the talking point around national championships in Australia is that Vic Country athletes are always ready to catch and shoot the ball. And they're always ready to catch, address the rim, and extra pass the ball, which I think is a really, really strong trait to have when we talk about international basketball. The one thing that I saw countless times last week at the Prospects camp, saw countless times at the Nationals, was you catch the ball in the seam with 7.5, 8 seconds to go on the shot clock, and then you go dribble handoff with the wing. The issue is that you're open in the seam to catch and shoot the ball, but you now go dribble handoff with the seam, and now if I'm a good defensive team with some good defensive principles, by the time that handoff is executed, there's 5.5, 6 seconds to go, and I just yell switch, and now you're shooting a contested shot. So I think in regard to decision making and knowing when to shoot the ball, with 7.5 seconds to go on a shot clock, that may be in the next 7 seconds the best look we get at an open, uncontested rhythm jump shot. And that's kind of what the showcase is trying to encourage. Like, shoot the ball when you're open. If you keep missing, that's the cue. There's something wrong there. So now you've got to go to work to make that shot. And if you can make that shot, then you can be a player down the field.
Well, the other thing is the three biggest things out of our worlds, the ability to get in the paint is a must. Well, the showcase allows athletes to have greater success at that. The ability to stay in front of a player. Well, if people are trying to get in the paint, now you've got to actually defend people starting on the perimeter. It's not a pack D. It's you actually got to have to defend the man and then be able to shoot the ball better. So the three areas that we've just come back from saying, technically, we've got to get better at those three things. This at under 12 straight away helps that. And that to me is a real positive.
I got something sent to me the other day as well from an avid listener of the pod, Robbie. Slovenian basketball, the federation does not encourage screening until under 15s, which is really interesting. And if you watch the mini basket events that take place around the world, which is this lowered rings concept, there's no screening. There is exactly what Justin just said. It is, you got to get 2 feet in the paint with great spacing, and now if it's one-on-one, you make a play at the basket, and as soon as you occupy that second help defender, get the ball out of your hands, and now someone's going to shoot an open jump shot. So it's I think worldwide, Israel just won the Euro under 20s. Like, that's crazy. There's so much good hoop being played around the world. I think we ought to consistently push the envelope on how do we develop better athletes, because all these countries, like, you're talking about Mali, small basketball and country Mali, yeah, is going to have 2 pros. Like, unreal. So we've got to just keep on trying to evolve and not just sit on our laurels.
And again, you know, talking about our worlds, it's a much deeper tournament now. Like, every nation there has got something going for them. So again, if we just stay satisfied, well, you know, chances are we move back to the pack. Whereas if we can keep thinking outside the square a little bit and trial some things and help our athletes get better, it's only the way forward, in my opinion.
Well, that's another thing that's come out of the showcase, obviously, is we're already looking at next year's, what it looks like. What can we change? What can we improve? What didn't work? Like, I know we're sort of talking about, do we go to 4-on-4? and create even more space, more touches. Like, it's, do we shift the three-point line again? Like, what do we do with it? So I think it's actually a really healthy discussion to have about where does the game go and how can we make our athletes better.
Oh, yeah. And that's what really good businesses do, mate. They just have a model for something, they'll trial it, and when they need to make tweaks and changes, they'll do it, and they'll just keep doing that until they find the model that's most sustainably going to help their athletes or their clientele get better.
Excellent. That's it for us this week. So our first one back after the break, I would say we were flawless.
Felt pretty good. Felt pretty good.
We're back. That's the most important thing.
We'll rate ourselves.
Well, of course, speaking of rating, please do rate and review the podcast.
He is a veteran. The veteran.
Spotify and iTunes, you can get it, as well as Audio Boom. Please do like, share, retweet. And if you want to reach out on socials, you can get us via the hashtag Talking Splits.
Robbie, Siebel playoffs this week, and you two guys have tried to get out of this without addressing the Siebel playoffs, so I'll do it for the listeners. Diamond Valley play who this weekend, Robbie, please?
Geelong, good listener of the show. Dave Herbert's crew were always very good.
At where, please, Robbie?
At Diamond Valley Stadium, 7:30 tip, I
Very
say.
Good, mate. Good luck. Good luck. And you, mate?
Against the Hobart Chargers, 8 p.m. Saturday night at the home of the Kilsyth Cobras.
Very good, mate.
Should be a great matchup.
Good luck to you both. Robbie, you can wrap the show up now, please.
Very kind of you, Mike. We do appreciate that. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you guys next week, and thanks for talking to us.